A gruff Chinese farmer named Hao Shangli barks orders in broken Portuguese, steering his white Toyota through Mozambique's dusty roads. He's one of approximately 1 million Chinese citizens who've migrated to Africa in just a decade, a movement so vast yet so underreported that it's reshaping an entire continent beneath the world's radar. Think of it as the new scramble for Africa, but this time the colonizers arrive not with gunboats and Bibles, but with pickup trucks and business plans. While headlines fixate on Beijing's official policies and billion-dollar infrastructure deals, the real story unfolds in these daily encounters. Chinese shopkeepers arguing with Senegalese merchants, miners clashing with Zambian workers, farmers negotiating with Mozambican villagers over ancestral land. These aren't diplomats or corporate executives. They're entrepreneurs, smugglers, teachers, even prostitutes. Ordinary people whose collective ambitions are writing a new chapter in global history. As China evolves from the world's factory to its most transformative economic force, Africa has become the testing ground for a fundamentally different kind of globalization, one increasingly conducted in Mandarin. When China opened its economy in the late 1970s, wise policies met perfect timing as globalization surged. That first wave operated on Western terms, transforming China into the factory of the world. Now China is creating the second wave, becoming the primary agent of economic change across the developing world. Sensing Africa's post-Cold War abandonment by the West, Beijing saw both opportunity and resources. China's trade with Africa exploded to $200 billion by 2012, a 20-fold increase since 2000, surpassing any Western nation's engagement. Africa itself stands at a historic crossroads. Demographics, education, and communication technologies have created possibilities for several nations to escape poverty. The continent's population will double to 2 billion by mid-century, creating a demographic dividend of predominantly working-age people. By century's end, Africa could reach 3.5 billion people, exceeding China and India combined. Yet, as Ghanaian think tank executive Ed Brown observed, this relationship will determine Africa's future for the next 50 years, raising the urgent question: will African countries seize the advantage or become the appendage of somebody else all over again? In Mozambique, Hao Shangli's candor echoes colonial attitudes. "I didn't think they were so clever. We had to find backward countries, poor countries that we can lead." After securing 5,000 acres of abandoned Portuguese plantation land cheaply, he faced villagers claiming ancestral rights. His solution revealed dynastic ambitions. "I'm bringing my children here. If my sons have lots of offspring with local girls, what do the children become? Chinese or Mozambicans?" A strategy any 19th century colonizer would recognize. These migrants fled corruption, pollution, and overcrowding, embodying entrepreneurial ambition paired with cultural insularity, expressing dismissive attitudes toward locals while building lives far from China's constraints. In Zambia's Copper Belt, young Bohe exemplifies this complexity. During China's Cultural Revolution, he secretly learned English from Bible pages. Arriving in 2002, Young established Tianfen, a copper processing operation that quickly recovered his $625,000 investment when prices surged. Unlike fly-by-night operators who devastated Congo's environment, Young built a sustainable business with four smelters, though sharing the problematic labor practices common among Chinese enterprises in Africa. Inside Yang's copper operation, workers toiled without masks or protective gear in unbearable heat and toxic air. When questioned about Chinese bricklayers earning $1,500 monthly while skilled Zambians made only $300, Yang grew defensive. 20-year-old Chola Warren earned merely $10 weekly, facing dangerous chemical exposure while Chinese workers received proper safety equipment. Shift supervisor John Cassande stated, "The Chinese are no good. They don't treat us like people." These tensions fueled opposition candidate Michael Sata's 2006 campaign, leveraging anti-Chinese sentiment. A 2010 shooting at Columbine wounded 13 miners when Chinese supervisors fired on protesters. When SADA won weeks later, Chinese companies immediately doubled worker pay, revealing fair wages were always affordable, just not prioritized. In Namibia, labor activist Justina Jonas documented Chinese builders paying 21 cents hourly versus the 95-cent minimum wage. When unions organized a conference, Chinese representatives reportedly claimed Namibians were lazy and there is nothing you can do to us, sparking outrage and government intervention. China's African economic presence centers on securing natural resources for industrial expansion. In Zambia, Chinese companies bought the Chimbishi copper mine for $20 million during 1990's privatization, recovering their full investment by 2008. Northern Mozambique became particularly problematic, with Chinese operators running extensive logging and fishing operations in legal gray areas. Authorities intercepted 600 containers of illegally harvested hardwoods, with monitoring groups documenting China imported 190,000 to 216,000 cubic meters of illegal Mozambican timber in 2012 alone, worth approximately $130 million. At Mozambique's National Directorate of Lands and Forestry, Director João Carrillo dismissed the land crisis despite widespread evidence of officials selling large concessions to foreign interests. His prediction that such issues would persist for 30 years ignored that Mozambique's old-growth forests faced imminent destruction at current exploitation rates. Ghana faced similar devastation. Chinese miners conducted illegal gold mining operations using harmful practices that destroyed forest ecosystems and contaminated agricultural land with toxic mercury. Across Africa, democracy reshaped China-Africa relations. Senegal blocked shadowy real estate deals. Zambian miners won better pay after Chinese labor practices became an election issue. And villages near Bamako saw ex-mayors persist against corruption. Democratic institutions, parliaments, opposition parties, civic groups, forced disclosure of massive Chinese deals Beijing preferred private. Ghana, independent since 1957, with one of Africa's strongest democracies, exemplified this tension. Former World Bank representative Edward Brown questioned Ghana's $13 billion Chinese loan package. The Chinese decide what they want. They arrange the financing. They send their companies. Think tank Amani warned, "We are simply stumbling through this relationship with China. China has a strategy, and we don't, and they will take advantage of us." China insists its African project differs from Western imperialism, yet patterns echo historical empire building. Beijing practices monument diplomacy, 42 stadiums, 54 hospitals, the $200 million African Union headquarters. It invests heavily in African media, Star Times controls 10% of sub-Saharan digital TV, and established over 50 Confucius Institutes for cultural influence. Most strikingly, approximately 1 million Chinese migrated to Africa, paralleling historical colonial settlement. In Angola alone, the Chinese population surged from under 500 in 2003 to over 250,000 by 2012, creating self-contained communities operating parallel to local economies. As Chinese influence expands, Africa faces a pivotal choice. Retired World Bank Director Albert Osei urged collective negotiation. If the West is jealous of China, we should say to them, train our people and give them a bigger role in your companies. Liberia's former labor minister praised Chinese efficiency. They didn't do a lot of feasibility studies. They just went and got the job done. While Mali's cooperation minister noted strategic generosity. They don't say this is in exchange for anything, but when they begin doing business with you, they may expect certain things in return. Yet Malian farmer Falery Boli warned, they are like a boa. It observes its prey quietly. If it is a jewel, then you shouldn't be selling it off to just anyone who comes knocking. Africa's future hinges on daily interactions between ordinary Chinese and Africans. The continent possesses the demographic momentum, resources, and institutional capacity to dictate terms, but only with strategic vision, collective negotiation, and the courage to demand partnership over dependency.